you.
That was Mr. Cole's request.
Oh, okay.
You're close.
Sorry.
You were close.
Sorry.
Same caucus.
Sorry.
Because we care.
We're both on the same page.
Good morning, members of council. Administrator Baker, thank you for the opportunity to come by and talk to you about where we are in respect to developing our new standards and regulations for subdivision streets. We've been working on this for approximately, September would be almost 3 years. So it's been a major undertaking for DelDOT, and we couldn't have done this, gotten to this point without help from a lot of different people. Several committees we've had established over the last 2.5 years, and we've had participation from Sussex County, from, in particular, I wanted to recognize Rick Kautz, who has been invaluable to us in terms of providing us input and suggestions to make our regulations better. We are approaching a point at which probably by the end of the summer, we're looking at having a final public hearing on these regulations. And so again, thanks for the opportunity to update you. Mark Cote will do the actual presentation, and we're here to answer any questions you might have in that regard. Again, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, as Ted said, we are here to present our new manual on subdivision streets and our state highway access manual. I'll go through some of these slides quickly. This just illustrates the legal authority which we have to promulgate these regulations. The new manual is going to replace two older manuals, one on the actual subdivision streets manual and another one on the access to our state highways manual. Both of these were done in the early 80s. Some minor revisions were made in the mid 80s, and we have several policy implements that we've used in the since that time, but really we have never had any wholesale revisions since the mid 80s. The purpose of the manual is to really set forth the requirements that DelDOT uses to have access for developments to our state roadways, and also the planning, design, and construction of any subdivision streets. The reason to revise these manuals is to incorporate the current state and federal regulations and requirements that exist today, to consolidate the documents into one resource for an all-encompassing resource where people can go to one place to find all their information, and also to reflect the current engineering best practices that exist today. There's a lot of things such as like stormwater management regulations didn't exist when the original manual was developed, so this manual reflects all of our current policies. As Ted said, we had used a lot of input. Rick, again, was instrumental in giving his input on the development of this new manual. We formed technical and stakeholder committees, which were comprised of the three counties, League of Local Governments, the TMA, State Fire Marshal, all our divisions in DelDOT, as well as other state agencies. And the Home Builders Association were represented in the Consulting Engineers Council. Some of the key action dates is we started this process back in September of 04. We started off with a kickoff meeting to develop the guidelines to develop the new manual. We had a technical committee, stakeholder committee, and core groups. And then last March, we came up with our final draft of our regulations that we filed with the registrar. We held a public workshop last March, took public comment, and in the last year we've been responding to those comments. Our path forward is we plan to have another public hearing this coming July. We'll have a 30-day public comment period. Then the secretary will determine whether we should adopt the manual with existing comments taken into account, or whether we need to go out again to address some major issues that could possibly arise. We'll establish the process of how we're going to phase in the manual, since developers have a lengthy process to go through. We'll have to figure out, once they're over a certain hurdle, then they'll be past that and won't be subject to the new regulations. We'll also have to update our agreement with Sussex County and to coordinate with all the counties in their new comprehensive plans. Some of the new fees that we will be implementing is the, right now we have an initial stage and construction stage review fees. Those are still will remain the same, no difference there. There's two fees that were going to be associated with traffic impact studies. One is if the development has to do a traffic impact study, then we're going to have a $5,000 flat fee to help defray some of the costs the department incurs to review those TISs. Right now we spend anywhere from $5,000 up to $20,000 of our money to review those.
Is this NSI's subdivision?
No. A subdivision has to be a certain size, or a commercial development has to be generate a certain amount of traffic in order to warrant a traffic impact study.
Will that be spelled out in your plan?
Yeah, I'll get to it in a couple slides. Thank you. Yeah, if you do have questions, feel free to ask. Then also, if a development is not large enough to warrant a single traffic impact study, we're also looking at trying to do area-wide studies so that if there's several developments that have come through in the same area but aren't large enough to warrant a TIS, then we would have them contribute to a larger area-wide study so that we can figure out what the cumulative effects of all the developments are in one particular area. We're also looking at recapturing $195 fee for DENREC that every time DelDOT signs off on a plan through DENREC, we pay a fee. So we're looking to recoup that cost, and then also a 10% inspection fee that we plan to have full-time inspection on all of the developer activities, construction activities. And so we'll be looking to institute a 10% inspection fee to cover all the costs for that inspection. On the traffic impact study, as Councilman Dukes had referenced, right now the warrants for TIS ranges from 1,000 to 3,100, and we're lowering that to 400 vehicles per day. So any development that would generate more than 400 vehicles per day would warrant a traffic impact study. Or also if they generate more than 50 vehicles in the peak hour.
What would be a subdivision that would be the size of a 400?
Typically, a good question. A single family home generates a little less than 10 trips per day.
Each home.
So for a single family development, you're looking at around 40 homes.
40 homes, okay.
Townhomes generate a little bit less traffic because they don't have to tend to have as many kids and things like that. So that would be maybe like 70 townhomes. And typically in the peak hour, it's about 10%.
Is that a national? Excuse me. That's a national standard?
Yes, it's a national standard.
You guys didn't just think that up?
No.
In the back room somewhere?
No. We use a national standard, so all the engineers know how much traffic their development will generate.
And so even the consultants working for the developer are using these same numbers. Gotcha.
Yeah. So whatever they're proposing, they'll know beforehand whether they'll meet those warrants. We're also looking at some level of service requirements that if they're in a rural area, then they are not allowed to reduce the level of service below a level service of C, which is kind of in the middle, C in rural areas and D in developed areas. Again, we have the $5,000 review fee. We'd really like to do is more area-wide studies. We get a bigger bang for our buck there. And also future developments know that if they're coming in an area where the area-wide study is performed, they'll have an idea of what requirements would be asked of them. We could also require a development to contribute to a area-wide study instead of a TIS if we believe that completing
that
a TIS.
That was 200 trips?
Excuse me?
Okay, what is a...
Yes.
If they have to contribute anything, if you determine anything less than the 400, they get...
Right, then they're not subject to doing a TIS.
But you could charge them still to do an area study?
No. Well, they have to meet that lower threshold to... And then once they reach 400, then we determine whether they would do a TIS or whether it's better off to do an area-wide study.
Real quick, right? The fees you've shown us here, are they, how did you calculate those? Are they some kind of national standard also?
No. What we did for the review fee is we kind of took a historical average of how much the department spends out of our money to review the developer's work. And the minimum is $5,000.
In-house, you did those in-house?
Yes, in-house, correct.
Okay, did you, how do they compare with other counties, other states, other whatever? I mean, did you do any kind of comparison so that we know if we're in line or?
What we do is just, again, that's the minimum of what the process is the developer hires an engineer to do a TIS.
Right.
We then hire a consultant, another engineer, to also do a TIS and compare the results. So it's really just based on some actual cost. But again, we probably spend at least twice that. But we didn't want to have a flat fee of, say, $10,000 when a fairly simple TIS, we might only do five.
What we were essentially trying to do, I think Mark has hit it, is cover our cost.
Gotcha.
Although
I'm just trying to get an idea.
You ought to be trying to make some money to get some, there's a trust fund, but that's not the purpose.
This just covers costs, okay.
Right. I'll go through this quickly, but one of the new additions to our new manual is we're also looking at revising our TIS process. As I alluded to before, the developer hires a engineer. They go through the entire process of developing a traffic impact study. They submit it to the department. We review it. We do our own TIS. We compare the results. It's really a long and cumbersome process and takes a long time. What we're looking at doing is we're planning on having the developer hire a engineer that has been selected by the department to do the TIS directly for the department. This kind of skips the first step, and so that only one TIS will be done.
Do you see a lot of differences with the developer's TIS and the department's TIS? Because I know when an outfit's getting paid by a certain individual, they try to produce results.
And that's our concern. That's why we do our own TIS here. The engineer would be working for the department, so we would have obviously confidence that they are representing the department.
And are you sure your engineers that you're hiring aren't also out the back door working for these same guys?
Good
they
question.
They don't have a cozy relationship.
Right. We have a bunch of safeguards that any engineer that's performing work for us has to forego private development work in the state.
Okay.
To avoid that conflict of interest.
Just
Good, thanks. So what we expect that this will reduce the process time to go through the traffic impact study is probably down from 11 months down to 3 months. Obviously, time is money. So we expect a lot of developers to follow this process. Also, DelDOT will therefore no longer be having to pay our own consultant to review those fees, so that should save a significant amount of department resources. We spend about $1 million a year to review traffic impact studies. We're hoping
and you
that
get no reimbursement at the time for this present time.
Correct. That comes directly out of our trust fund, but we don't. We don't charge any fees for that.
Because so you form all that out. I mean, you have subcontractors looking at all this.
Correct.
You guys don't do it in-house.
No, we do not have enough in-house staff to perform all those TIS reviews. So where we're hoping to spend is probably only about $100,000 a year. So we would save $900,000 a year. Again, the taxpayers would save all that money because the work would be farmed out directly to consultants working for us. It would also take up less time and resources from the department. So we expect, we've gone through the hiring process for these traffic engineer consultants, and we hope to have that process up and running.
What does it say? They said the developer could recoup costs for the TIA. Okay.
Yeah, so DelDOT again is not
I guess if you're
going to
do
money.
This and then you're guaranteeing these people you can have a turnaround of 3 months?
Yes.
Shame you didn't do this 5 years ago when there was doing a lot more development.
Yeah, this was really right exactly. You know, trying to improve our customer service, that we're realizing that the existing process is not working. And so we've developed this idea to improve that, and we expect a lot of developers to take advantage of this. So we're very hopeful that this will improve our customer service. We'll also allow them to continue to move forward as the consultants are doing our reviews. The developer can also choose to retain their use of another consultant to review basically our consultant's work. So that'll be interesting to see whether developers just blankly accept our work or if they'll also hire their own engineering staff to review our results. Some of the other things to highlight in the manual is, again, our minimum standards for right-of-way dedication along our roadways. This hasn't changed, but just put this up here again for more emphasis, that whenever a development comes in through our process, we look to make sure that there is ample right-of-way along the frontage of that proposed development, so we have the ability to make improvements that may be required at some point down the line after the several developments go in. So we always look to see how much right-of-way exists.
That's what we have on the books right now?
Yes, this is what's on the books. This isn't changing. But this is often a very hot topic on developers, so I just kind of emphasize
you're taking land without paying for it, basically.
So, it's not quite like that, but it basically gives us the ability to make improvements so that when you have several developments come in that are generating a lot of traffic, it gives us the ability to do widening, to make improvements. Okay, one of the other things that we're requiring is, which is also a hot topic, is, again, we are asking the proposed developments to improve the frontage of their development to our minimum standards. Starting from the bottom, there are local roads. And this is on a functional classification map that we have, so that anybody who is potentially developing a piece of land, they know what type of road their development fronts on. A local road, we have established our minimum standard is 11-foot lanes, 5-foot shoulders. If it's a major or minor collector or a minor arterial, it's 12-foot lanes, 8-foot shoulders, and if it's a freeway or principal arterial, it's 12-foot lanes.
So all new improvements will have shoulders nowadays?
Yes, what we're looking for is any development that comes in, if they have 1,000-foot of frontage, instead of just looking at their actual entrance, we're looking at them improving their 1,000-foot of frontage that eventually, as adjacent developments continue to develop, these pieces of frontage will get kind of patchwork together. It gives us the ability to come in and then fill in the gaps, and then we'll have a complete linked system with minimal.
Is there any scheduling on filling in those gaps? Because it seems like those gaps could be gaps for a long time.
That's true. We try to look at also if a development might have 1,000-foot of frontage, but it stops 100-foot short of an intersection. We would also ask that they make a logical link to connect to that intersection so that, again, we get more complete pieces of roadway. Again, this is the construction and administration fee that I had talked about. Again, we're looking at getting full-time inspection on all the construction activities. This and the other proposed fees do need to be adopted and passed by the General Assembly, then anything that develops revenue for the department needs to be voted on and passed by the legislature. So we'll be looking.
Have you asked the legislators before to do that?
Yes, we did.
How long ago?
I'm thinking it was in our old manual, actually. This 10% fee was in our old manual, but was never enforced because of that. So I don't know, but
it's been since the 80s.
'80s, yes. So
you still don't know if you're going to get it or not, depending on if they
correct
support it.
Yes.
If they got guts or not. Huh?
Yep. And then just to wrap up here, we have a couple of important items here in the appendices. One is that, as you know, the two manuals were from the early 80s, so we're looking at not waiting another 20 years before we make some manual updates. So we've established a process where we can make simpler changes every year and kind of have an annual revision again to reflect the current thinking that's going on. Appendix B is an important new law where we have improvements that require right-of-way, that if developers need to acquire land to make improvements, so that if we ask them to make an intersection improvement or put in a shoulder or a bike lane or a drainage improvement, that developers have the ability that if discussions break down with the private citizens, that they have the ability to use our eminent domain powers to acquire that land, of course, at fair market value. They would have to follow all the same steps as the department does.
But right. What you're saying, what if they don't want to give you the right of way, then you can condemn it and then have to pay them for it.
Yeah, what happens now is the department might require a turn lane or something to be built at an intersection. There's someone who has, land that is insufficient in order to build that right turn lane. Right now, the developer says, well, I don't own that land. You know, what can I do? The department, of course, says, well, for your developer to proceed, you need to acquire that land. It might be a 5-foot strip take that's, 100 foot long. The fair market value might be $5,000, $10,000. They offer 10, the private landowner says, I want $500,000. And really the developer has nowhere to go.
Right.
He has to continue to try to negotiate. This basically just gives him some backing that, we feel it's absolutely necessary that these improvements should be done, and so that if discussions can't reach a conclusion with the private landowner, the developers just can't be held hostage, that the private landowners haven't won the lottery, and so that they will be given fair market value. It still, of course, would probably be in the developer's best interest to say, well, the fair market value is $5,000, I'll give you $10,000, or whatever that number might be, knowing that the property owner, if they do come back through our process, will probably only get $5,000. So,
but you have that right now, right?
Yes, this was, we went through the Senate Bill 284 was passed in the 2004 session, and then we had to go through and figure out how we were going to actually enact that regulation, and we went through that process last year, and it went into effect in December of 06. So we're actually in the process of using this probably in 7 or 8 different locations around the state where developers have had trouble acquiring land. We'll obviously also be careful on how it's our decision whether we choose to enact the ability to do this.
And the developer will pay them.
And yes, the
bottom line is the developer will pay. If it's $5,000 or $10,000, whatever you negotiate.
Correct. Okay. And then the developer will actually pay all the appraisal costs, all those kinds of things. The other thing that, we hear is, and I'm sure you do too, is, I've had to make 5 submissions to DelDOT. It's taken me 1.5 years to go through the process. One of the things that we are really focused on is developing checklists and plans so that engineers who come through our process know exactly what is required and can follow a checklist for depending upon what they're doing. They can go right down, figure out a set of plans that will meet our requirements, send them in. We'll maybe have hopefully 1 review. The engineer can then make comments and send in a 2nd set for final approval. If we're seeing plans 4 or 5 times, that's obviously doubling, tripling our workload, as well as spending resources for the developer and the engineer. So we're looking to develop all these checklists to dramatically improve our process. And if you're interested in a full copy of the regulations, which is about 350 pages, I do have a PDF of that. If you're interested, you can email me. My email's up there, mark.cote@stateDUS. We're looking at having, again, a workshop in July with an effective date of August of this year, and we'll be having our workshop in July. So we certainly invite you to review the document and submit comments.
You're gonna have, if you ask for that, the General Assembly to pass that, so you're going to have to wait until the next year to be able to get that done?
Yeah, we are probably, yes, going to have to wait to the next legislative session to to pass the major ones. The maybe the $195 dollar fee and some of the other ones might not be very say controversial, but certainly the inspection fee as it was previously will take some effort in getting that passed.
Right.
I just want to add that the option A and option B is something that we hope to have implemented within the next couple of months. We've already made our selection in regards to the firm that can do this if a developer chooses to use option B and reduce the time from 11 or 12 months down to 3 or 4 months in the review process with GIS. So that will be a plus in that case. Probably we're shooting for, I believe it's July.
Yeah, July.
That's part of this, but independent in respect to the fact that we're already on through the selection process.
I got a question. Who negotiates for you guys? Do you have one person as a negotiator, or does it's just whose ever turn it is goes and negotiates with developers?
It depends what the process is. We have one group that handles traffic impact studies. So if they are improvements related to a traffic impact study, then their group it kind of has the lead responsibility.
But is there any one individual out of these groups that has got any kind of background in negotiating? Because I always think that government comes out on the short end of the stick. I know the county, when we negotiate, I don't know, you know, in each of these departments, is there anybody who's, you know, really good at negotiating?
I mean,
and maybe there is somebody, there's skill to it, I think.
Absolutely. Well, I was just going to say, I mean, we've all been trained and taking different negotiating classes. And we
that was hostage negotiations, wasn't it?
Training. Yeah, well, that comes in handy too sometimes. But yeah, we don't have one specific person that negotiates.
When we recruit for new individuals, we look for someone who has that capability to do that, particularly in a position like the GIS, subdivision reviews are important for the developers.
Right.
That is one of the prerequisites for hiring someone in that kind of position. Have that ability and play that
game. Yeah, I've just felt that I know what we see here at the county. We have different people or negotiating different things, and I just wonder sometimes, you know, if they really are capable of negotiating with the attorneys and the guys who do it every day, you know, as opposed to somebody who's
appropriate or necessary. I will step in as the assistant director and work with staff to get through that process and it's requested.
Okay.
To the point where they're at a loggerhead, then often Mark or they'll rock and roll for me and say, could you sit in on this meeting with this developer or engineer? I will do that as well. And I've got almost 30 years of being in the business, so
okay.
I've seen quite a bit through that period.
I guess this manual should give you a hit list. I mean, you got that. I mean, when you sit down and say, this is the way it is.
It's very true.
I mean, with
the new manual, really, our entire process is spelled out in what is required and what isn't. So the idea is we're not negotiating over every single
development. Because I think a lot of times I hear, you know, I call it the Del Dot syndrome. You know, the plans go up, and then they review them. They send the list back. They fix it. They go back up, and it's a whole other list of different things that should have been picked up the first time.
Exactly.
And you know, and those kind of things, you know, that.
Well, to be fair, sir, that's also a case often of the developer's engineer not listening to what we said the first time.
Well, I mean, I understand if he corrects them, but
I think
I've
we get a little of that at
that,
the county,
that,
too.
Yeah.
So, don't we, Mike?
Again, we expect right. The checklist to make a big improvement.
Right, you should only
they go
the
right down
that
checklist.
Are on the checklist instead of going into the plans farther on. And, you know, I think, you know. And that one development that they did put the shoulders on Route 9, I think it's Beaver Dam or whatever it is called. You know, the only thing, I think it's a great job. You should require the developers to do that. But it puzzles me that we have a bike path that's 300 feet long, and there's nothing, and that's it. You know, I think maybe you should keep their money, and then when, as George says, when they fill it all in, then maybe do it. But, I mean, it just puzzles me that you would require the developer. Just those little things, it doesn't make good sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, even though I know it's a bike, but you require a bike path.
It's a good idea, but it's at the timing's bad.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes
you seem kind of asinine to me, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes, depending upon the location, what we do is we ask the developer to provide a 15-foot easement in which a bike path could be located in the future.
In the future.
We realized that building a 300-foot out in the middle of nowhere probably does not make a whole lot of sense.
Well, I mean, it does happen.
At least we plan for the future.
It's there, you know.
So in that sense, we are negotiating with developers.
Okay.
But we also realize that in most cases, a lot of cases, we get one opportunity to get some of the things in. Once that opportunity is gone, it's gone. And the future,
well, I think you should,
future
if
ability
anything, take the money, put it in escrow,
right.
And then when you get the job done,
is
you know, like, do it then, make a solid path down, because I certainly, you know, I think most developers or anybody, as long as the rules are the same, they'll know where they're going, they know where how they got to charge, and that's, I think, the biggest problem we have.
Right, no surprises.
I got one other real quick thing to ask, and you don't have to, it may not be your department, but I sat the other night at South Bethany. They were talking about state projects and the stormwater that's dumped into the canals and things like that. I know the developer, I saw up here, the developer has to abide by this NPDES or something requirements. Does the state, when you do projects?
Yes, we are bound by the same rules.
You're bound by the same rules. Now you weren't in the past to, because I'm just wondering, like in South Bethany, where all this stormwater is directed into their canals.
Yeah, I think the stormwater regulations came in maybe 89, 91, something like that.
Okay, so it's just been fairly recent, okay. But you are now required to,
yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
And the other bugaboo that I got with the state, I'm always curious, when you're short on money, do you have any regulations and manuals, or maybe a revision of, when you go in and do a subdivision, and bring their roads up, or if the developer puts into state, you know, standards, that they all of a sudden become accepted by you guys, and then the taxpayers have to maintain, repair, replace forever the cost of subdivisions, roads. I mean, there should be some kind of cost sharing with those residents or something. I don't think the taxpayers of this state and the county or wherever should be bearing that burden within these private subdivisions, because they're really not public roads.
Yes, we have a process that the developer has to outline whether the subdivisions.
Well, they become that, but I mean, not really. Okay,
right.
Go ahead.
We have the process is they have to identify whether they are private subdivisions and private streets that are not subject to our rules and regulations, which is also means they not subject to our maintenance. So the taxpayers,
I'm just thinking that with the money as short as it is, and time and energy that's applied, you got crews out there working within subdivisions. It just seems to me crazy. No offense, but it does. It just seems in this world, I think it's something that you ought to be either weaning yourself from, or working with some kind of private public partnership with each of those subdivisions. So maybe on their tax bill there would be some kind of recouping of money that would go to a fund that then could be used for it. But I don't think my tax dollars should go into some private community because they said, oh, we'll dedicate them to the state and they can be public roads. Well, the public really is not using them.
Well, the problem occurs often when those streets are below standard and
right,
they're still accepted. And that's why we strongly encourage that everyone, all three counties, use our standards and require
as opposed to the county standards.
Yes, exactly. Because typically, if the roads are built to the standard,
I don't mind. Wait, no,
how long would they last?
Well, okay, I don't disagree with that. It just I don't like. I don't think your energy and your time. I mean, even your removal of snow. I guess you know, if somebody called up, you'd have to send the trucks in there. I just think there's other priorities in today's world, other than the subdivisions, and then the amount of money that's gone and time and everything else that goes to that, and the amount of manpower. So I just think that there ought to be, and I know it's something you guys can't do, it's under state law that you're required to do these, but
correct,
there should be some revision there, I think, to bring a better sense of balance to it or something. I just don't get it.
We thank you, John. We have got to get on with the agenda.
Yeah, okay.
We appreciate you coming down this morning.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, I do.
Okay, the next item is a proclamation regarding Community Action Month, and Miss Bernice Edwards is here today, I believe. Oh, there she is. Yeah, come on up, Bernice, if you like. And this, I'll read the proclamation proclaiming the month of May as Community Action Month. Whereas community action agencies were created when the Economic Opportunity Act of 1964 was signed into law, whereas community action agencies have more than a 40-year history of promoting self-sufficiency for the limited income, whereas community action agencies have made an essential contribution to individuals and families in Sussex County by providing them with innovative and cost-effective programs, and whereas community action agencies are needed as major participants in the reform of the welfare system as we know it, whereas the limited income continue to need opportunities to improve their lives and living conditions, thus ensuring that all citizens are able to live in dignity, whereas Delaware and the entire United States must continue to wage war on poverty by providing support and opportunities for all citizens in need of assistance. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Sussex County Council hereby proclaims the month of May as Community Action Month in Sussex County, and in recognition of First Day Community Action Agency's hard work and dedications to the residents of Sussex County. Thanks, Bernice.
Do you have something you'd like to say?
That's enough.
No, no,
that's on behalf of the Board of Directors and the staff of First State Community Action Agency and the residents that we serve in Sussex County, I would like to thank the county for proclaiming May as Community Action Month. Thank you.
I need a motion to adopt the proclamation.
So moved.
I have a second motion. Mr. Rogers, second Mr. Jones to adopt the proclamation. Is Reverend Mr. Baker, Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion is carried. I'm glad to see that you are here one time to get the proclamation,
and not ask for no
and
money.
You're not getting a check. It's an unfunded proclamation.
That's right.
Okay.